And thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and thou shalt have good success. What does success look like to you? What does success mean to you? Does it mean that you have a lot of money? Does it mean that you've got a nice car, a fancy big house? Does it mean that you own or have a high position in a business? Does it mean that your family is picture perfect? Does it mean that you have a lot of friends? That's how many people view success nowadays. But if that's your definition of success, would you say that Jesus was a success? He didn't have any money. He didn't have a car. He didn't have a house. He didn't have a picture-perfect family. He had more enemies than he had friends. All of these things that we just listed off is how many people view success. Jesus didn't fit any of those criteria. Yet I think all of us would agree that Jesus was successful. He was the picture of success, being the Son of God. And so maybe our viewpoint of success is very skewed. I won't say a little skewed, a lot skewed. We focus on these kinds of things all of the time. In the scripture reading that Brother Cliff just read to us, God is talking to Joshua here as he has just taken over leadership of the children of Israel. And he tells Joshua, this is how you're going to prosper. This is how you're going to be successful, is if you know my word. If you boldly teach my word. If you meditate on the word and you stick to the word. You obey the word in your life. Everything goes back to the word. That's how you're going to be successful, Joshua. And that's how we need to view success in our lives as well. Not the way that so many people view it. As you can tell by the title of the lesson, it's Mistakes of Successful Men. But I purposefully put successful in quotation marks. Yes, these men are successful that we're going to be talking about today, but not necessarily in the way God views success. They're successful based on the world's standard of what success is. I want to begin by looking at a story. It's actually popped up. You know, there's certain things that pop up in your life more than one time. Well, this story has popped up in my reading more than one time, and it popped up again, and I wanted to, that's kind of what sparked my thought on this lesson. But it shows us what worldly success can lead us to, not the end that so many people want. But this is what it says. It says in 1923, a very important meeting was held in the Edgewater Beach Hotel in Chicago. Attending were 10 of the most successful businessmen. Those present were the president of the largest independent steel company in the world, the president of the National City Bank, the president of the largest utility company, the president of the largest gas company, the greatest wheat speculator, the president of the New York Stock Exchange, a member of the president's cabinet, the greatest bear of Wall Street, head of the world's greatest monopoly, and the president of the Bank of International Settlement. By most people's standards, I mean, how many presidents did you have that, or the head, or the greatest of? These were the top people in their field. And so many people would say, yes, these are no doubt successful people. But, as Paul Harvey used to say, when you look at the rest of the story, you find out that their success isn't everything that they thought it was. And so I want us to just take a snapshot of 25 years later. And every one of these men and where they ended up in that short amount of time. The president of the largest independent steel company, we know him as Charles Schwab, a name that I think we've all heard of. What did he do 25 years later? He had died while dealing with bankruptcy. The mighty have fallen. This is what keeps coming to my mind when I look at this. The next one, Sam Insull, the president of the largest utility company, spent time as a fugitive from justice, died with 12 cents in his pocket. After all that he had done, that's what he was left with. Howard Hobson, the president of the largest gas company at the time, went insane. Arthur Cutton, the great wheat speculator, died awaiting prosecution for tax evasion. Richard Whitney, the president of the New York Stock Exchange, had just been released from Sing Sing prison on charges of embezzlement. Again, we know what money does to so many people. The next one, Albert Fall, a member of President Hoover's cabinet. He was pardoned from prison so that he could go home and die. Well, they misdiagnosed him, so he lived another 12 years. But still, I went from being way up here to being deathly ill. Jesse Livermore, the greatest bear on Wall Street, as it says there, committed suicide. Ivar Kreger, the financier and the head of the world's biggest monopoly, also committed suicide. Leon Frazier, the president of the First National Bank of New York and the Bank of the International Settlements, also committed suicide. And this is just the highlight. The article that I was reading, it talks about what this did to these people's families. It destroyed their families. They were having to pay the cost for what these men decided to do and got themselves in these situations. 25 short years. You know, growing up, I always heard people, the older people, say, man, 25 years is, you know, you're going to blink your eyes and it's going to be gone. Well, as I look at my children and see pictures of them on my TimeHop app every day of just a few years ago and how much they've changed, you're going, wait a minute. We've got 11-year-old. We've got a 12-year-old this week coming up. He was just born yesterday, wasn't he? But that's what's happening. Just in the blink of an eye, 25 years, these people went from the top to the bottom because success was based on the world's standards, not on God's standards. And that's what we've got to consider this morning. This is what happens when we put our value in worldly things. And I would like to say that this doesn't come true for good people. I would really like to say that this doesn't happen to godly people. But we know that's not the case. We're going to be looking at some Bible examples this morning of some people, good people, who all but one of them went from having worldly or having maybe good success, maybe some of them, to giving into worldly success. Think that they've got everything made, but realize that that's not the case. They put their value in worldly things. And so we've got to make sure that our focus is the right way, in the right place as it should be. The first man that I want us to look at this morning was a man we know by the name of Solomon. Over in 1 Kings chapter 11. As we know, Solomon was the wisest man to ever be here. You know, we always say that, and I think, well, Jesus was here. He's the Son of God, so we'll say someone who was not the Son of God, he was the wisest man to ever live on this earth. And to many, wisdom is a dead ringer for, well, if you're the smartest person in the world, you've got to be successful. And we know that Solomon was successful, but in different aspects at different points of his life. In 1 Kings chapter 11, we find that wisdom is not synonymous with success as we look at this story of him. Verse 1 of 1 Kings chapter 11 says, "Now King Solomon loved many foreign women along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the sons of Israel, 'You shall not associate with them, neither shall you associate shall they associate with you. For they will surely turn your heart away after their gods.' Solomon held fast to these in love. And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away." Just as God said was going to happen, so it happened. Again, Solomon he was a powerful man. He was a wise man. But he quickly found out that if his focus and his desire was not for godly things, then he's going to pursue those worldly things. He pursued those worldly women, the women who he was told not to be associated with. And in the end, he ended up following into idolatry. And at his death, we see his 25 years later, I don't know how many years it was, but we see his family's divided, his kingdom is divided, his sons are wicked. There's so much chaos going on in his life of this successful man. Now, not all of that is his fault. I understand that. But a lot of this was. This, all that we just read here, 1 Kings 11, that's his fault. He was told how to be successful, just as Joshua was told how to be successful. But Joshua chose to do it, and Solomon decided, no, I'm going to choose my own success and pursue the things that make me happy. But his end, his 25 years later, as we say, that doesn't sound like success to me. And so we got to look at all these aspects in ourselves. So wisdom is not a way that we can find success, worldly wisdom, that is. Another person who was a very well-educated person, he was wise, he was considered to be successful, was Moses while he was still in Egypt. And Moses is going to be the one person in this lesson who he goes the opposite direction. He goes from the worldly wisdom to the worldly success to the godly success, the right kind of success. So he's kind of the oddball out here. As we know with Moses, he spent the first third of his life in Egypt. We know all the things with how he was put in the basket and Pharaoh's daughter pulled him out of the water. And he was raised to some extent in as Pharaoh's daughter's son. And so he was raised in Pharaoh's house. He would have had all the things that go along with that, the perks, I guess you could say, of being in the house of Pharaoh. And we know he was raised in that way. In Acts chapter 7, verse 22, it says, "And Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and in deeds." Now let's look at that part. Educated in all the learning of the Egyptians. There's a book that's called The Heart of Hebrew History. And it talks about the Egyptian culture, specifically in the time of the Israelite captivity. And I want you to hear, this is what the Egyptians were teaching to their young people, which would have included Moses. It says, "In the arts and sciences, they were well ahead of other people of their day, or the other peoples of their day. Their acquaintance with mathematics and physics is revealed in the construction of the pyramids and the temples built by them. Their scholars were taught reading, writing, spelling, grammar, arithmetic, geometry, bookkeeping, law, and sacred literature." And so these are the things that Moses would have been taught. He was a very well-educated person. When I think about Moses, I don't think about that. We know that when God called him to serve him for the last third of his life, you know, he said, "Oh no, I'm not good at this. I need somebody else." He didn't speak with the confidence of his education. He was well-educated in these things, being in the position that he was in Egypt. But he quickly found out that his success, his wisdom in Egypt was nothing compared to the wisdom and the success that he was going to find with God when God called him away. He understood what true success was. And that's what we see in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 24 through 26. We look at all these people who did great things in faith, and notice what it said about Moses and where he viewed success. He chose real success over the Egyptian success. There in verse 24, it says, "By faith Moses, when he had grown up, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin," the worldly success. Notice verse 26 though. Considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking for a reward. I would even dare say he was looking for true success, not the success that he found in Egypt. It was there for him. He had to make the choice that this is not success. God is going to give me success. I'm willing to give up all of this so that I can have that. And that's exactly what we've got to be willing to do. That says a lot to me about Moses' understanding of what success is. And we may not have that same understanding sometimes, or may not even want to think about it. But as we apply that to ourselves, education is a huge deal. But I think it's a bigger deal to many than it should be. Education gives us, it gives us opportunities in life. It's great. It gives us great tools in life to get through. And we need to be educated. But I've known too many people, again, being in the education field for so long, I've seen people who their drive and their whole desire is, "I want more letters next to my name. I've got to get that next degree because that's my standard of success, is by how many degrees I have." You've got to understand that if that's our pursuit and that's our motivation in life, is to be focused so much on that, that our attention and our focus and our desire for godly wisdom fades away and becomes second to that, we've wasted it. That education is useless. And so we've got to make sure that we don't put success, as these two have done at this time, in wisdom, in education and things like that. We need to be educated, and I hope people understand what I'm saying here. But that can't be our number one desire and focus in life. When we stand before our judge in eternity, it doesn't matter how many degrees we have. It doesn't matter how many letters we have after our name. All that we're going to care about at that time is, where was my faith? Where was my trust? Was it in God? Where was my obedience? Was it in serving myself or obeying God? Did I obey in baptism so that I can access the grace, the forgiveness of my sins? That's what's going to matter. How did I live my life since that point? Was it so I could stand here with my head up to serve my God? Or to hear the rejection of my God because I rejected Him with my life? That's what's going to matter on that day, not how smart we were. Again, we see things like that with Solomon. He had the wisdom, but he didn't have what was most important. He was not successful in that aspect. Another successful person who allowed worldly things to distract them from godly things is Samson. Turn over to Judges chapter 16. You don't have to go to Sunday school many times to know who Samson is. We know he was a war hero. We know he was the strongest man to ever live. But along with that, we also know that Samson had a woman problem. He had a fatal attraction to women. And just like with Solomon, these are not the people you need to follow. These are not the women that you need. Those are the ones that they pursued. And that goes true with Samson. Beginning in Judges chapter 16, verse 4, it says, "After this, it came about that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, 'Entice him and see where his great strength lies, and how he may overpower him, that we may bind him to afflict him. Then we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver.' So Delilah said to Samson, 'Please tell me where your great strength is, and how you may be bound to afflict you.'" You know, Samson was raised to know God and to serve God. But much to his parents' dismay, disapproval, disappointment, whatever, he followed in the path of Solomon. And he allowed these women to lead him away from God. Now, before you start thinking, well, Tim is saying that women are the reason that men fall away exclusively. That's not what I'm saying. I'll be fair on both sides of that. I've known many men who have acted the fool because they were enticed by a woman. But I've also known many women who played the fool because they were enticed by men. And this is the same thing that we're seeing a common thread several times throughout the Bible of those who allow the other sex to pull them away. It happens. It happens far too often. But it should also remind us of our responsibility as well. As men and women, doesn't matter how old you are. I think some people think that the older you get, well, you get less, the sexuality is not a problem to you anymore. Well, that isn't the truth. You can see that people of all ages that have it. But we've got to look at our responsibility as men and women not to, first off, draw someone away from God. I've known Christians who have pulled people, not to been the example, the light and the salt, to bring people to God, but instead they pulled them away from it. I've been that person. Sexuality can be a huge problem. We need to stop acting like it doesn't exist. It does. But we've got to make sure that we don't allow someone else to pull us away from the Lord because of our desire for them either. Again, where's your treasure at? Is it in this person or is it in God? If they're not going to help you get to heaven, then why do you have anything to do with them in that way? It's a serious thing that we've got to consider. And kids don't like to, I say kids, younger people don't like to hear that. But it's the reality of it. This is your soul on the line, not just your happiness as you see it in this 5 minutes. But that's what we get caught up in too many times. Been there, done that. Got a closet full of shirts. We got to make sure that we don't fall into that. We don't draw other people away because of our power, because we're a male or a female. And we don't allow them to pull us away either. That's what we got to remember here with Samson. Solomon, Samson, both of these people, that was their problem. Their biggest problem is being pulled away by those of the world. Their success in that way, they may not have thought about it that way, but it was in those kinds of things. And so it doesn't matter how strong you are, doesn't matter what position you have or how much power you have, that should not be where success lies for us. Another person, I've really got to get off this person because I think I've talked about it in the last 3 or 4 weeks, is the rich young ruler. Another person there in Matthew chapter 19, we read about him, and the only reason I bring him up in the next one up exact next example up as well is because these people show us that worldly success isn't true success at all. These next three people all have the name rich in their title, and that should tell us one thing right there about where we get mixed up with our success. But this rich young ruler here, beginning in verse 20 of Matthew chapter 19, says, "The young man said to Jesus, 'All these things I have kept from my youth. What am I still lacking?'" Verse 21, Jesus said to him, "If you wish to be complete, go and sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven, and come follow me." But when the young man heard this statement, he went away grieved, for he was one who owned much property. You know, I think we all know this man. I think we can all relate to this man in some way or another. He's young. Maybe we're not all young. But he also was religious. I think we can all say that we're religious here. That's why we're here today. To some degree or another, he was wealthy. And I don't think anyone in this room can say that we're not wealthy. Maybe we would like a little bit more, but we are all wealthy. He desired to follow Jesus. That should be something that we all desire as well. So we can relate to this man right here. He's done a lot of good stuff, and a lot of good stuff for the Lord. He's been obedient in a lot of things, but where is his success? Where is the value in there? Again, he was too attached to these material things, these successes of life. He was too attached to those. As I was thinking about this, I think about this, call them success idols. That's what money is. It's a success idol, isn't it? So many people follow it. I've earned it. It's mine. Look at all that I've done. We're going to talk about that in the next example. I've done this, and look at all the possessions that I have. He had a lot of possessions. He did a lot of good. But his success was somewhere else. In a world that is so enthralled with the almighty dollar, we've got to look at ourselves and see, what am I doing? Am I doing the same thing to myself? We've got to understand that wealth does not make us successful any more than it made than wisdom made Solomon successful, or strength made Samson successful. Wealth doesn't do anything for us to help us. If anything, it hurts us. As Paul says there in 1 Timothy chapter 6, as he's talking to Timothy, he says, "But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pain." You know, we all want to support our families. We all want to be financially stable. It's not fun not being financially stable. It's not fun at all. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of worry there. But if it's not our focus, then that should help us out a little bit. But if our desire is for monetary success, for worldly success, then I'm going to suggest to you that we've already pretty much signed that check for spiritual failure. You know, money isn't going to send you to hell. Again, that the love of money, all these things that we just talked about there, those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare. The money is not the problem. It's our attitude toward it. When it's our success, then we are going to fail otherwise. Again, I think about Matthew chapter 19, verse 24, talking about the rich man getting to heaven and comparing it to the camel going through the eye of the needle. It's hard to do that because, again, God knows how hard it is for us to, when we've got a lot of money sitting there before us, or if that's our desire, how hard it is to break away from that. And so our attitude has to be right in those things. Again, right along that same line of thought, the rich farmer whose barns overflowed. You know, we talked about him in Bible class the other night. Let's just look at a few verses from his account in verse 18 in light of what we're talking about here. Luke 12, verse 18. And he, that is the rich farmer we're talking about here, he said, "This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have many goods laid up for you for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared?'" Verse 21, "So is the man who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God." Again, like this rich young ruler that we just talked about here, this rich farmer was very well off. Again, it says here that he had many possessions and he had abundant crops. You know, anyone that's in the farming business, if you say, "Well, this person's got a lot of possessions and they have a bumper crop, abundant crops," you're going to say, "Hey, that guy's successful." Now, next year may be another story. But they understand, hey, you were successful in this. And that's what he is. Unfortunately, in all of his worldly wealth, did you notice what it said there at the end of our passage there? It says he put his treasure in himself. He was not rich towards God. God was not his level of success. His physical things were his level of success, and that was his problem. His focus was preparing for the now. It was making himself comfortable now. It wasn't in preparing for eternity or making himself comfortable in eternity. He got those things wrong. His success level was skewed. As Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6, we got to make sure that our treasure, our reward, our eternity and success therein is in the right place. Beginning of verse 19, he says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasure upon the earth." Don't make yourself successful on earth, basically. "Where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal." Verse 20 says, "But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Again, unfortunately, there are many hearts that have put their treasure in the wrong place. They push towards the worldly success instead of the godly, eternal success. We've got to make sure that our hearts are in the right place. Yet another one, another rich person here, the rich man opposite of Lazarus. Take a look over at him in Luke chapter 16. A lot of familiar stories that we know about, but I think we can make easy application of these people. There in verse 19, we see how this rich man with Lazarus was described. It says, "Now there was a certain rich man, and he habitually dressed in purple and fine linen, gaily living in splendor every day." Hey, that sounds pretty successful to me. He's got the nice fancy clothes, the purple clothes that were expensive. He wears those every day, and he's living a gay, happy life. Isn't that great? But then you look at verse 22, and it tells us a different picture. It talks about what true value is whenever you're talking about worldly success. Verse 22, it says, "Now it came about that the poor man died, and he was carried away by the angels to Abraham's bosom. And the rich man also died and was buried. And in Hades he lifted up his eyes, being in torment, and saw Abraham far away, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried out and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool off my tongue, for I am in agony in this flame." Even though this man was worldly successful, he was wealthy, he wore the dress to the nines, as we say, every day. He didn't have things in the right way. He neglected his soul. He paid attention to the physical things, but he neglected what was most important. Sure, he was successful here on earth, and I don't know, we don't know this. Did he think that maybe his success was going to pass on through to eternity? Well, I'm good here, so I'm going to be good there. I don't know. That's just speculation here. But what he found out real quick is it doesn't matter how much wealth you have or how many nice things you have, you can't escape judgment. Judgment's still going to come for you. And you're going to find out what real success looks like really quick there. And in the end, instead of being a success, he was a failure. And that's the thing about this story that's always fascinating me. You know, Lazarus was a worldly failure. But in a moment, he became an eternal success. Well, this rich man was a worldly success, but in an instant, he became an eternal failure. We've got to understand what's most important here. What's going to not end versus what is going to end. So we've got to make sure we, and take a look at what we're building towards with every day that we've got until that day where it's going to, we're going to find out real quick what things are in that moment. And we'll find out how successful we really were. And we can't do anything about it any more than this rich man could at this time. One more person that I want us to look at. This is a person who many, I won't say Christians, because just before that time, many soon-to-be Christians, many Jews, thought this man was successful. And his name was Judas Iscariot. Let's look at Judas for just a moment. On the outside, Judas seemed to be a very successful person, a successful Jew, a follower of Jesus. You know, what did people know about him? Well, they knew that he was one of the 12. He was a treasurer. Of course, we know that he wasn't doing that very honestly. We know that he was one that was going out preaching the gospel. He could do signs and wonders. Many people no doubt thought, man, this guy is successful. This is a great person. You know, I'm torn with Judas because we can read all these things about him, But we also know that whenever Jesus was telling them one of them was going to betray him, they didn't sit there and just go, boom, he's the one. They're asking themselves, wait, is it me? And so there's got to be something going on there, and I'm not even going to try to understand how all of that worked. But we can see that that Judas had success screaming at him, I would say. I mean, hey, you were handpicked by Jesus to be one of the 12. Success, you would think. But again, we know the rest of the story and how that works. But again, this is a reminder, just because something looks successful on the outside, just because someone has a position doesn't mean that they're actually successful. In Luke chapter 22, we see when Judas's success was found out, to see what kind of worth it was, where his success ended. And I would suggest it didn't happen here at this time. We already know about the money box and things like that. But this is where we really know, we can see for sure. Verse 3, look how it begins. And Satan entered into Judas. That says right now you're not a success. you've given into those kinds of things. Who was called Iscariot? Belonging to the number of the 12. Verse 4, and he went away and discussed with the chief priests and officers how he might betray him to them. And they were glad and agreed to give him money. And he consented and began seeking a good opportunity to betray him to them apart from the multitude. Again, this is one of those good lessons for those who have been strong, successful Christians for many years. How long was Judas seemingly a good, strong Christ follower? Seemingly for a very long time. Several years he was sitting there walking with Jesus and doing what Jesus wanted him to do. But that reminds us, it doesn't matter how good or how strong of Christians we've been in the past, how successful we've been as Christians in the past, that doesn't always stay. We all know Christians who have fallen away, who have served for many years, and we got to understand that can happen to us as well if we aren't careful, if we don't have our success in the right place. We can very easily switch from being spiritually successful to worldly successful, which means spiritual failures in just a very short amount of time. And that's why, as you look here at 2 Timothy chapter 4, well, I thought I had it on here, but I guess I don't. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verses 7 and 8, another familiar passage to us, but Paul says, I didn't fight for a little bit. I didn't run for a little bit. He said, no, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. And in the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. The other night in Bible class, Charles talked about confidence. And we need confidence as Christians. We don't need arrogant confidence that says, yes, I've got it, I'm going to heaven, and we miss our own sins. We can't see the reality of who we are. But we can have confidence. Paul had confidence. He said, there is laid up for me this crown of righteousness. But he also knew that that crown of righteousness wasn't going to come if his race changed, if he didn't finish that race, if he didn't fight for the right side. That wasn't going to come to him. But he knew that. I've got to finish that. And if I want this reward, then my success has to be in the Lord and him alone. And in that way, I can give up all these other things. I can deal with my physical impairments. I can do without things. You can beat me. You can put me in prison. And I will sing to the Lord. Because that's where success is. We've got to have that same thing for ourselves. So many times we get caught up in this world, in this rat race, and trying to get more and be at the top and be better, beat the Joneses, or however you say that saying. We want to be better and better and better. But are we being better and better and better for God? Or are we staying the same? Our finances go up. Our popularity, our success goes up. But our spirituality stays right here. Or maybe as this goes up, this goes down. Where's our success? That's what I want us to consider this morning. Again, we can make this same mistake that we've talked about these people today. We can be successful worldly, but that's going to cost us our spiritual success as well. When we start focusing on these things of this world, our focus, our trust, our faith in God is going to suffer for that. Again, it doesn't matter. All those things that we listed off in the morning, how much money we have, how nice our clothes are, blah, blah, blah. All these things that we focus so much on, I want and I want and I want. Those things aren't going to get us to heaven at all. And so we got to make sure that we have our success in the right place and consider those things. Again, let's not lose focus on the important things. I'll go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 12, back to Solomon. We started with him, we'll end with him. This is New American Standard, so it's going to read differently, but I like reading different things in different ways because it kind of gives you a little more insight, I think. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Let me ask you one more question. How successful are you this morning? Are you worldly successful? Are you spiritually successful? Don't just answer quickly. Think about it. We all, every one of us here, have something we can improve on. Maybe it's an attitude issue. Maybe it's some other thing that is working on us, and Satan is hitting us hard. But how successful can you really say? On the day of judgment, when you stand before your judge, can you stand with your head up? Or if you're being honest with yourself, are you concerned? Because you're not sure if your success has been in the right place. That's what we all need to be thinking about. I hope that our true desire, our goal in this life, is to find that true eternal success in the Lord so that we can stand in judgment, ready to receive our reward, not our condemnation. Lessengers, I hope that this has been something to encourage you, something for you to think about this morning. Again, stop and be real with yourself. And maybe there's something that you can do better with your life than you have. Maybe you can share this with someone else who may have their priorities out of order or whatnot. But I hope that it's been something at least for us to consider and to think about. If there is something that is in your life, you've got your success mixed up, I hope that you'll have enough strength and humility to make that change. If it's a public thing, we can help you with that. We can always pray for you, encourage you as we go through these things. You never have to be alone as we face these things in life. But maybe it is you're not a Christian this morning, but you realize, as Garrett's father has this morning, that you know what? I need God. My success has been so messed up. And I want true success. I want eternal success. And I know that I can't do that without God. Without the blood of Christ to wash away my sins, to make sure that I am clean and I can serve Him for all eternity in heaven. If that's a need that you have, I hope that you will make that known. Whether you're at home this morning or you're here, we'll be happy to help you out in any way possible. But you need to let us know so that we can do that. Please do it soon before it's everlastingly too late. All right.